Well, everybody, welcome back to the Trick Podcast of Joy and Gozo TV here on this beautiful Friday, August 23rd, 2019. Welcome back to my channel. Welcome back to this episode. Today, perhaps a bit of an uncomfortable episode for some. Even for me, I want to talk about maybe my frustration with the white evangelical church. And so perhaps this topic isn't necessarily relevant to everyone out there. If you've maybe if you've never been a part of a church, if you are perhaps not a person of faith, or maybe you've never really dealt with these kinds of issues, this might not be right up your alley, but it might be something that someone that you know has dealt with. And I can tell you from experience that if you look at just the political landscape these days, there are a lot of people that are facing race issues, prejudice, all kinds of tensions that primarily deal with the race relationships in our country, and specifically in my case, that deal with the white evangelical church. You know, it's no secret that 80% of white evangelicals, I think over 50, is that correct, voted for President Trump. And so when you have statistics of that nature, you have to then ask yourself, you know, what does that mean? What does that say? What exactly are people voting for? And then even maybe another question would be, now that it's been 3 years later, almost 4 years, are people going to vote for him again? And my understanding, my read, is that most people are going to vote for him again, including, let's say, 80% of white evangelicals. And then the question is, how can that be with all that we have seen as far as, you know, really for me, it's not just about a president. It's about what's happening in our collective consciousness and what I consider the end of the, perhaps the sleeping giant who has been the person of color, especially the person of color that has a deep faith in Jesus Christ. We have been silent for way too long because of many reasons, and that sleeping giant is waking up. It's not always pretty. It's not always perfect. It's not exactly what our white brothers and sisters would want from us. But it is a process that, first of all, we have to respect in ourselves. And then second, I guess I ask for mutual respect for me and my story and my own process, imperfect / as eloquent or ineloquent as it may be. But I am always doing my best to be as eloquent as possible in these very important issues. So what am I talking about? Well, I recently tweeted just this morning a couple of things that I want to read. I wrote 4 or 5 tweets here. My Twitter handle is @DavidTrigLA, @DavidTrigLA. First, I said, I've pastored in the white evangelical church for 25 years. Nicest people, unaware of race and prejudice, never been called out until now. It is time. I also wrote here, most of my anxiety has come from being rejected by aspects of the white evangelical church. Another tweet says, why do we as people of color have to jump to peace without first feeling angry or upset? Have you heard of the stages of grief? Anger is a must. And then the last tweet here at David Trigalay is, I had a white evangelical leader recently tell me, you need to calm down, after my rejection of his plan to eliminate 50% of our church's income. And so I want to break down a few of those tweets and to most of all talk about what I believe is necessary for us to come to a better place as the Church of Jesus Christ. Because here's another thing. People are leaving the church. Well, they're not leaving the church. They have left the church by the millions in the last 10 years. Obviously, millennials being the number one group that has left the church. Really, I don't think they ever even made it into the church. But second, it's the next generation up from that. Let's say Gen X or builders. Really, it's a systemic thing. I mean, you have a 65-year-old that's left the church as well as a 25-year-old that's left the church. And the people that are still hanging on to church as we know it are mostly white evangelicals. And then you have, of course, some pockets of Hispanic churches that are mostly traditional, very fundamental, and then that keep people in fear. And then you have some places where you have perhaps an African-American community, the same thing, that is traditional, and the kids and grandkids no longer connect to that system. But for the most part, you have white evangelical churches that are the ones that are hanging on. And 80% of their people have been there for more than 30 years. And so they still have the money because they have had the means to survive and to pay their mortgage and to provide for their staffing. Pastors have had to compromise and be very careful to not rock the boat of their white evangelical congregants, meaning not talk about race or social justice or any issues dealing with Trump, or, I mean, all of this stuff that is in the minds of people. Most pastors, they either quit because they can no longer stand the betrayal of their own values, or they compromise. Or maybe they are a part of the problem themselves. Now, you also have a minority movement of what's called multi-ethnic churches. I consider myself part of that movement. And we're talking about a few kind of all-star churches that are growing. You have some that are millennial-type churches, but mostly made up of or led by superstar athletes, I was going to say, but it's really more superstar personalities from mega movements from Australia, from Great Britain, and mostly coming from musical kind of rock star groups, Planet Shakers and such, Hillsong, Bethel. And so, I'm not saying those are not movements of God. I'm just saying that, like with any group, you always have your all stars. And so, but if you're talking about just the evangelical church, and what I mean by evangelical, I'm including Methodists, Presbyterians, I'm including liberal churches, I'm including maybe a better term is Protestant, progressive, evangelical. I'm kind of combining all of them. I've been a part of Methodist, Presbyterian, Baptist, liberal, all you name it, Pentecostal churches, and all of them are suffering, dying, dealing with incredible amounts of exodus of people, of people just not caring about God. And then those that do minister to, let's say, inner city churches or urban churches, those pastors are having to do 2, 3, 10 jobs to make a normal living wage. Let's say that a manager at an In-N-Out makes $70,000 or so. We're talking about pastors who have no life insurance, who have no health insurance, who maybe finally bought their first home after 20 years in ministry, et cetera, et cetera. And so, and on top of that, you have a ministry to urban people that is overwhelming, to say the least. My wife is an educator, and it being a pastor in urban places feels exactly like being an administrator in urban schools. It is an impossible task because people's needs and their the chaos in their lives is so extremely high. And we're talking about, in terms of education, very low funding. You're always worried that your school may close, or you have so many needs for special needs teachers and therapists and counselors, and then people move so much that then a school could close any second. The same thing that's happening with churches. People are maybe here for 3, 4, 5 years, and they're not moving out of the city to go and buy a bigger house, like, let's say, the white flight movement of the 70s and 80s. We're talking about people moving to just simply get a job, to just simply try to have someone take care of their kids, to have someone literally provide mental health classes for their teenagers. So we're not talking about upward mobility. We're talking about survival. We're talking about people that are moving to just try to make it through the day. I mean, I had a family move back to Florida just last month, because they were too stressed to be here in Southern California, living in a one-bedroom, 5, 6 people, all of them working and yet still couldn't make it. The dad was having to drive 3-4 hours to go work at a restaurant. You get it, right? You know what I'm talking about. And so you have pastors who are, I mean, quitting left and right, including yours truly, who every day, every week, every month is being forced out of ministry by mostly by the white evangelical world that is unwilling to understand the radical shifts in all of these issues that I'm talking about, race and economics and mental health and movement of people and of trying to young people. I mean, let's just talk about young people. 26-year-olds, 25-year-olds, they act like they're 65, meaning they have very little hope. They are stuck. They feel like they can't leave their homes because they can't afford to travel to, I don't know, to another state even, much less to Europe or somewhere else. And they're working 5, 6, 7 jobs. They feel stressed out. I mean, so 25-year-olds have a lot in common with 70-year-olds in terms of a lack of freedom and a lack of options. And so even churches that are reaching, let's say, younger people or urban people are strapped for cash. They're dealing with aging buildings that they can't remodel. And yeah, the economy is doing great, but certainly not for my people. It is what Bernie Sanders and what Elizabeth Warren and all of these leaders are talking about. It's the 1%. And let me say this. I'm not talking about black versus white as far as these social issues. Most white people that I know are the ones that are dealing with poverty and isolation and a lack of options as much as the person of color. So this notion that people that are white have this white privilege as some sort of leg up on the rest of us, that may have been true in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But now it's just Jeff Bezos and Mark Z who are the ones with a leg up on the rest of us. Most white people that I know are electricians. They are construction workers. They are people who are retired and afraid at how they're going to pay for their car. And we're not talking about, yeah, okay, so maybe they have a home that they bought 30 years ago. Yeah, maybe they were able to do a few things to their house 20 years ago. It's not an issue of hard work. You know, that's a thing that I don't accept from my white brothers who will say, well, you know, the people of color don't work. They're just a bunch of illegals that are whatever they call those babies, crown babies or, I don't know, anchor babies. I mean, all these horrible terms to blame some other culture when really we have so much in common. Now, the thing that isn't talked about enough is that there are still people in power, white evangelical people, that are still closing their eyes and punishing churches, pastors, congregations, immigrants, the very people that they love, out of ignorance, out of a lack of information. And we, as a people of color that have been ministering to these individuals, meaning the urban people of our cities and nation, we have remained quiet. I know it's been true for me. We have been afraid. We have, because most of us got our first start or our first, yeah, we got our start by the grace or because of a white evangelical leader, right? It was a white person in power who went to school, who gave us, the immigrant, a chance to go and minister to the urban poor, right? Now, if your story is different, let's say, I mean, I have a lot of millennial friends, white, bearded, you know, just those handsome millennials that are out there, fresh out of seminary with their Dallas Willard and Social Justice, Brian McLaren and Rob Bell books underneath. Or if they're super conservative, then their exegesis and Greek and Hebrew manuals underneath their arms, ready to go and save the world, right? And social justice ministries pop up everywhere. And so I'm not talking about that kind of movement. That movement is really come and gone, if you've noticed. I mean, those churches are no longer around. You know, ministries that are social justice and helping the poor and laundry love, that stuff is fading away fairly quickly. towards more relationship-based urban ministry to mostly people of color. I'm talking about brown, 80%, 90%, African-American, 10, 20%, and then Asian, maybe 3, 4, 5%, and other maybe 1%. So we're talking about a colorization of what missional movements used to mean. You know, it's no longer just, anyway, I won't get into missional stuff right now, but. So when you talk about this awareness that is happening, this waking up that is happening among leaders of churches of people of color, it starts with a lot of frustration. You know, that's why my tweets, I even said, I don't think I read the first one that I wrote. I put on here, maybe this is the most telling of them all. Most times it says, I go between feeling angry and feeling love. This is what this feels like. It feels like such a dilemma. And this is what grief is like. We are grieving as people of color. We are going through this horrible dilemma. Do we really talk about how we've been feeling for the last 30 years in the church? Or do we move to peace and love? And, you know, I saw this image and there's this article by Ed Stetzer that it's basically, I haven't read it, but I need to read it. But it seems like it's calling out the anger in the church. And I have to read it. But all that I want to say to, not so much to Ed, Brother Ed, but to that idea of we as a people who have been hurt by this should just move to peace and love. I need to remind you that grief is grief. Grief starts with shock, and then it moves to anger. And then over these stages and over years, not hours, not minutes, not tweets, it moved towards acceptance. And then I believe the last stage of grief work, I think it's you build around what's been lost. Atonement, perhaps what we would call it in the church. But I mentioned earlier how one of the most telling experiences that I've had this year was by a white evangelical leader in his 60s, a man of power, who was in this meeting where the fate of my church, of our church, was being decided. And when a move was made towards basically pulling away, I put 50% here in those tweets, but really it would be more like 75%, 80% of our church's income or budget or whatever you want to call it, assistance perhaps. I, as a pastor of my church, of people in need, of orphans and widows, of immigrants and single moms, I, after hearing this conversation for 10-20 minutes that was basically being made about my church without my involvement or even my opinion, when I first caught wind of this, as I was sitting there, I immediately reacted and I said, this cannot be. And for the next 10 minutes, I in a very bold and very powerful way, I defended my church. I defended the rights of my people to know what's being done to them without even them knowing. And I remember this one white evangelical leader at the end of my response to this vote that was about to be made, he said, well, you better calm down there, Trig. Basically saying, you need to stop defending your church. And it was a very, very heated moment, and it was righteous in the eyes of God from what I did to this day. It's been now 6 months since that happened. I am confident that God was in that moment. Ironically, at the end of the meeting, I was outside talking to some other people. And, you know, part of my brokenness is that the minute that I stand for truth, I begin to be filled with panic because I'm afraid of the white man. I'm afraid of those people in power. I'm afraid of those who may throw me out, you know, of the country, instead of realizing that this is my right before God. And I'm standing for the rights of the people that I represent. This is not about me, nor is it about an ICE agent. But anyway, so I was almost taking it all back. This is my brokenness, and I'm growing in this every day. And I was talking to this same person after the meeting, and in my moment of stupidity on my part, I was saying, well, I don't know, maybe I could have said that differently or something like that. I regret that so much. I said exactly what I needed to say in the right way. And then instead of him saying, you know what, there was a lot of truth to it, he said, well, maybe write down some of your thoughts and we will see what we can do. Write down some of your thoughts and we will see what we can do. And there's just way too many politics for me to go into as far as what this all means and even just his statement. And let me just say, this is not about one person. That story, that is just prescriptive of dozens of conversations, public conversations that I've had just in the last few years. And let me say another thing. This is not about one church, one board, one pastor, one church. This is about what's happening in the universe, in the air. I consider myself a part of a, I don't know what I would call it, but I consider myself like I am on a mission from God to bring about the change that must happen in the white evangelical church. Which, now the reason why I talk about the white evangelical church is because I've been a part of it for 25, 30 years. And so that's my context. And so I can only speak to what I represent, what I come from, what I've been a part of. And I'm thankful for it. But these problems have been there for years. And I mean, and if you want to really go back, obviously, just go and hear MLK Jr.'s speeches. And if you want to talk about the flight or the plight of the African-American experience, then you realize that this is not new. Our country, unfortunately, was founded on Christian principles and slavery at the same time. Sin and holiness, light and darkness, and we're still dealing with that. And in some ways, this is all coming to a head, and I don't know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I wonder if this is all what it's meant to be, what Revelations talks about. And I think every generation feels like they're living in the end times, but I don't know, maybe we've been in the end times since Adam and Eve. I'm not sure. One thing I know, and that is that these issues have to come to a head. This was inevitable. And I think Trump was just simply, has been the, just the clearest. You know what? Let me just say this. I am thankful for President Trump because he has clarified the problem like no one else could. If Hillary would have won, which I don't think that would have been any better in terms of just the country, this would still be happening underneath the surface. But because Trump is who he is, and I don't blame him, just let me be clear on this, I don't think he is the problem. this was meant to be. This whole issue of people getting shot in El Paso and African-American churches being shot by racist people and a white young man, 25, 24, shooting 60 Latinos in a Walmart on a Saturday morning. I mean, these things were already happening underneath the surface. And then you add on top of that climate change and the healthcare and all of the different issues that we've been hearing about for years. This was meant to be. And now the question is, are we going to just sit around as people of color that have been in the white evangelical church? I'm talking about me and the people that I represent, the people that I love, including my white brothers and sisters. And just move towards, I don't know, reconciliation and towards amiability and, oh, I'm sorry, brother, that I raised my voice in the meeting when you were trying to destroy my church with a vote. I'm sorry for that. No, we can't move towards I'm sorries without going through the pain of what we've been feeling, of what we've been dealing with. I'm not looking for a handout. I'm not looking for someone to give me money or to give me permission to be a pastor. I'm talking about let the church do what it's supposed to do, and that is love people. And if I'm the problem, or you're the problem, or anyone on a board or in a church is the problem, then we need to get out of the way and let someone lead the way. And I believe my heart is to lead the way, to be a part of the solution, to call out the injustices that are happening all across the nation, but specifically in the WEC, the White Evangelical Church, because that's been my context. And to be clear about these issues. And to not fear that, oh, I'm being some angry brown man, you know, some angry black man. The things that people will say about football players or about athletes or rappers or pastors in my case. I'm not going to be afraid of that because I'm not here to be right. I'm here to stand for the truth of the people that I represent, of the lives that I have pastored and loved, of the people that I represent, the people that I love, the people that God has given me a burden for. I do believe I'm on a path to do something great. Not just me, we. This is not about me, this is about we. But I am going to be a voice that's going to be counted. Not towards hate. My, what's my end game? What do you want? I want freedom. This is what we want. Freedom. Freedom to forge a new path as people of color. And guess what we're going to do? We're going to give the white person all the love and all the grace that they need. Because that's who we are. As Latinos, African Americans, Asians, and people of color. That's who we are. My point is, we're not going to take anything away from anybody. I'm not here to take things away. If anything, I have a deep respect for this country that is built on immigrants, that was built on the backs of slaves from Africa and from Cuba and from Haiti and from the Dominican Republic and the Antarctica and the islands. I am aware that California was Mexico at one point, and that's why California means a hot, arid place. So we have towns like El Paso, which means the way, that are Spanish cities. Arizona, which means arid. I mean, it's in our laws. It's the name of our states and cities and streets. It's the name of our presidents and of our leaders. And yet to have my white evangelical friends support a president that is saying send them back to 4 U.S. citizens who are representing their own states and their own people, that to me is unexpected. And it's something that we have to discuss, to understand both sides of the aisle, to understand both sides of this dilemma, but to not ignore what's been happening. It's like the Bible says, what's done in secret will be made public by your Father in heaven. Guess what? All the sins of our fathers and forefathers and ourselves, my sin, my greatest sin is silence, has been silence. Now my greatest sin is coming out in the open, because now I'm seen as some angry brown man, some Latin lover with a machete. I'm neither of those things. I am a man on a mission to love, restore, to bring peace, but to go through the process, even if it's hard, to include, but to not move to inclusion without acknowledging the sins and the problems and the prejudices and the control that is taking place. And I have so many examples that are not for you to know. They're just things that I'm dealing with in my own little neck of the world. And I wonder what you need to do in your neck of the world. I don't know what your next step is. You may not be a pastor or a leader. You might be someone who is a real estate agent or an athlete or an entrepreneur. You might not even have a religious affiliation, but these are the things that matter to me the most and that matter to people like me. no matter where we're from, no matter if you look white or you look black, no matter if you're considered an immigrant because of the color of your skin or your birth certificate or your accent, or if you are considered white because you have blue eyes and blonde hair. It's not about that. And yet it is about that to some degree. It's about the way that we were born, the way that we were raised, the things that we believe, and most of all, our willingness to change. Our willingness to change. And I am thankful for the people that I love of all colors that are willing to change and go through these very issues and talk openly about these things, as uncomfortable as it may be, and to listen to what I'm talking about, and to allow me and those that I represent to speak into power, to speak to power, call out sin, and to bring out the gold that is inside of every one of us. My prayer for you today and for me is that we would move towards love and peace as one people of God. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The David Trigg Show. Find the complete archive at davidtrigg.com or subscribe for free through the podcast app on iTunes or Stitcher on Android.
Each week, we bring you a message of joy, success, and personal power in spite of fear, anxiety, and depression. Because as we like to say, though there's pain in the night, gozo comes in the morning.